Good afternoon. We'll open the House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness. Today is April 2nd, Tuesday. Thanks for being here. You'll notice our committee is scarce at this point. They will be here eventually. We can open the committee to receive testimony. They are testifying in other committees throughout the building. As you know, we are up on deadlines, and they are fast approaching, and so people are trying to force themselves upon others to get bills heard, and that's we wish them well in their endeavor. Meanwhile, we're going to conduct business here today. So with that being said, what we'd like to do is open a public hearing on House Bill 2158.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2158 has a -5 amendment, which has a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. The bill requires public universities and community colleges to charge in-state tuition to veterans discharged from service under other than honorable conditions and enrolled as undergraduates. The -5 amendment adds up the requirement that that veteran must have attended elementary school or secondary school in Oregon during the 3 years immediately prior to receiving a high school diploma or leaving school before receiving that diploma. It also requires that veteran to attend elementary school or secondary school in the United States, and it requires that veteran to receive have received a high school diploma or equivalent in Oregon. It would permit graduate student veterans to receive in-state tuition plus fees no greater than resident rate plus 50% of the difference between resident and non-resident rate from Oregon universities.
Thank you. And just to recap for the audience, it would be this committee's desire to have a broader bill, certainly. And it was our desire to start out that way, and that's what we came up with. But we also did not want to miss an opportunity to at least move a step forward. And I know that we're going to hear today from Mark Sansusi. And Mark, if you want to come join us, him and I had a phone conversation. He's got some concerns he'd like to express, and we want to hear from him. But in the end, just so that we're clear on this, this has been confused with the same bill as tuition equity. And the biggest difference between the two that we were told was basically the impact to the university that would come with this bill. And it really comes down to individuals, you know, bodies attending. In one case, obviously, with tuition equity, they didn't see a whole lot of folks being able to afford that opportunity since they're not given any other assistance with tuition. Versus veterans, which will have, if we do things well, their benefits in addition to the ability to apply for the assistance. So they see a whole lot more veterans taking advantage of the opportunity than what they see in the tuition equity bill. I will also state that this includes graduate, which the other doesn't. And again, rather than say, no, we're not going to do anything because we can't do what we wanted, we decided to get together and find some common ground and move forward. And we appreciate OUS and working with us on that. And again, the community college expressed concerns, so the -5 does that. So without further ado, Mr. Sansusi, thank you. Welcome to Oregon once again, and thanks for all your work that you do. And identify yourself, and it's all yours.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Committee. For the record, my name is Mark Sansusi, the Department of Defense Regional Liaison for Military Families. I'm here to express our concerns on House Bill 2158. Mr. Chair, you and I have already had the conversation. So as you said, in the end, I know where you expect to go with that. But in terms of the Department of Defense, the amendment, the -5 amendment, we feel like defeats the intention of the original measure, which is to defray the out-of-pocket costs between in-state and out-of-state rates for our veterans who are in transition from military to civilian society, even if not previously a state resident, to be able to, with their honorably discharged post 9/11 GI Bill benefits, to pick a program in a school that they might prefer, maybe based on the program and not on cost. So I'm here today just to express our concern regarding HB 2158, and we'll start looking at SB 820, which I know many of you signed on for and has not yet been altered in this way. So short and sweet, I know we've already had this discussion, Mr. Chair. That's where we stand on this thing. In terms of future support, we don't know how many veterans who graduated from Oregon High School this will affect. I do know that in Washington State, with many more veterans, the fiscal note was $774,000. The Senate bill passed 49-0, and now it's in House Appropriations, where We will take that one up next week, so just in comparison. And with that, I stand for any questions. Thank you.
No, and thank you for being here and your comments and all the work that you're doing on behalf of our veterans. The one fiscal that came out of our office through the fiscal officer, OUS, was offered based on, I think currently we have approximately, I want to say 73, it might be 76, veterans currently attending the university as it is now. And if they were charged a different rate and money was withdrawn, they assumed that that would be approximately $1 million. So that was based on, you know, how that could impact them further. The other concern, and I don't know if you've seen this in other states, maybe you could share, one concern was also that this could include online, and that was never our intent as a committee. It's always been about physical presence in a classroom. But have you seen an online effort being made on behalf of veterans in other states?
Mr. Chair, no.
Okay, so that was, you know, that was...
Now, we discussed it when I was here the other couple of times, but that's not been our intent either. It's been pretty much in resident, brick and mortar.
Right, and that's what I was recalling. I just wanted to make sure that we were on the same page there. I mean, we intend to move forward, and to continue to march. You mentioned the Senate bill. Whether or not that's going to get any juice next door, I don't know on that, but we also felt like it was important to at least take a step. If not the step as far as we wanted, at least a step forward, and this bill kind of represents that.
And Mr. Chair, we appreciate everything you're doing, and you guys have been champions for us. And the next measure you take up with military spouse, we're in totally agreement with those amendments, and would love to see that one go forward also. So
yeah, we're glad you're here for that as well.
Yes.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Mark, I appreciate all the work that you do. I think it's fantastic, and I appreciate you schlepping down here from Washington to be here today. How many states do currently offer in-state tuition to veterans who had stepped foot in their state before and have that type of law, what the original law proposed? That would be the first question. And the second piece of that is, do we have any insight? I mean, one of the arguments that the university system brought up is, you know, we don't fund our schools in such a manner that, you know, we subsidize the out-of-state tuition and therefore the in-state tuition, and therefore it's, you know, a hit to our fiscal to, you know, have in-state tuition, because what we charge students at in-state rates don't actually cover the true costs. And so curious what your thoughts are about, what other states' funding mechanisms of their universities who have passed this, if there's really any big difference in terms of the state funding that comes forward. You might not know that, but that might be something if you could chase for us, certainly would be helpful. Let's start there.
Representative Parrish, through the chair, 20 states, including the Commonwealth of Virginia, which just enacted in-state tuition, in-state residency. The issue is framed for us as giving someone immediate in-state residency, thereby getting in-state tuition. The way these bills in Oregon have been molded, it's just immediate in-state. 20 states offer policies for in-state tuition, including Virginia, which is a rather large military state that just enacted it, and also Idaho and Alaska, where they already have regions policies that were adapted. They didn't even do it legislatively. I will have to chase down an answer for you as to funding mechanisms as to the differences. But in the 20 states, because it's now 20, it's not that many. I'm familiar with some of the other ones as written, and I've not seen anything that says you have to have graduated from high school or resided here first. So this is a new one, but I can go back and do some more research on how things are funded. As far as fiscal notes go, and I don't believe the one on this bill is on OLIS, because I think I tried to look it up. But in Washington, and if it's similar, the thing that I think is of a concern is if this were to pass without these requirements, then starting next year, those veterans who show up here will be paying in-state rates. Someone else will be, they're competing for in-state rates for admittance. Someone else will be paying that. So, and even in the Washington one, it's almost like the fiscal is built as a zero-sum game, that if that person, the veteran's not paying, then no one will, which we dispute. So, but as far as differences in funding, I can do some more research on that.
Follow up.
The other question I would ask, and you again might not have data, and I should have Well, I didn't know you were coming, so I would have probably got you these ahead of time so you could chase data. But the 20 states that have enacted this, do we have a sense of how many soldiers are currently using their GI Bills in those states? And do we have some comparative data that we could get against states that, like ours, that don't currently offer that, and see the uptick? And certainly base states are going to be a little bit more than others, but the states, maybe from a real, even sharper apples-to-apples comparison, would be states like ours that don't have a real strong base structure where they have enacted something like this, and some comparative numbers from one state to the other in terms of that being an enticement to get folks to their states and other states leveraging that as a tool.
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, that's been something we've been looking to put together. And even from the beginning, I asked the question, if Oregon has 1,200 people who move back to Oregon and call them as veterans, what's the percentage of those new veterans who move back here or move here and elect to enroll in a higher institute, a college, university? And we don't have percentages of those numbers. And then only on fiscal notes like yours, when you have a number, do we have any sense of what the numbers really are? Washington State has a fiscal note which with some estimates as to numbers of students that go to Central Washington, Eastern Washington, UW, all those. So that would be another data collection effort that because we don't have that at the tip of our fingers for comparisons. Great question. In Virginia, how many veterans will be getting this to, for comparison purposes with Oregon? I can do more research on that, but we don't have that readily available.
That would be great, because, of course, I'm going to continue to put pressure on this. I actually still dispute the fiscal, but for the fact that at the end of this school year, those students would then be considered in state. They've made a year, and now they're in state. And if this were enacted, the fiscal would be zero. But, again, it's how you want to interpret it and how people want to interpret it. So I'm going to continue to dispute the fiscal piece on this from here to Sunday. But, anyway, I appreciate you chasing those numbers for us.
And I see you've been joined at the dais here, so let's find out what they have to offer.
Obviously need help.
Yeah, now we've got a team.
Not the reinforcements.
Cavalry arrived.
Yeah, that's right. And Mark can certainly take care of himself. For the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Colbum, Deputy Director of the Military Department. And with me in this panel is the distinguished Director of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and we were sitting in the back of the room kind of plowing through this, And it seems to me that in the amendments, in the dash 5, and I'm going to go right to line 8 on the first page, where we've basically made it worse for out-of-state veterans with that exclusion. Currently, if you're an out-of-state veteran, the most you're going to pay is 50% more. And now we've made it 100% by taking that line out, because we're allowing, if you haven't been here before and you didn't meet the requirements of the other amendments, the other part of the amendment, which is having been to school here in last 3 years or 5 years, essentially we just made it tougher on out-of-state veterans to come to Oregon and go to school. I understand the problem that you're dealing with respect to the fiscals and the other issues, but I would highly recommend that you do not exclude. At least they get half off now. And if this passes in this present form, they will pay 100% unless they were already here when they left for the service. So we actually made progress when this bill was passed three or four years ago, and now we're doubling back and causing 100%. So I get why you can't go the full thing, but I would certainly not change that piece of it.
Chair Matthews, member of the committee, General Caldwell and myself. Well, for the record, I'm Cameron Smith, Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. We're a little slower than my colleague from the Department of Defense, and that's really what we hinged on in terms of that. It is not... it's resident rate plus 50% for anyone coming back right now, which is going to be a better deal than the full 100% unless you meet that high school diploma as a local citizen before you join the military. And it is the other states, they haven't seen a rush on their educational institutions in terms of military flocking to where now they have an in-state resident. There's enough of them out there, and the rest of the states are going this way, that it will be simply a seamless system eventually across our 50 states. And these citizens are bringing back the GI Bill benefits and other educational benefits that are important both to OEUS and the community colleges. So I think we always try to get around the fiscal issues, but seeing if we can do it in a way that's productive is the hitch.
And if you forgive me, that's not just the Dash 5, that was the Dash 4 prior to. I mean, this is the work that we discussed last session, or not last session, I'm sorry, but last meeting. And so now we're realizing that perhaps what we've done is taking a step backwards, not the step forward we thought we were doing. Well, and I appreciate you catching that, because obviously I think you know it would not be this committee's intent to take us a step backward on any issues regarding our veterans. And so, it's scheduled for a work session today, but obviously we need to work this out. So we'll figure this out and appreciate that coming to light. But again, not our, might be asking how we can work to fix it to address the fiscal without impacting this way, to still get something towards graduate, but we need to move, in some place forward.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add to what Director Smith said as far as a rush, this issue is the first year this issue has made our 10 key issue list in the Department of Defense. So the states that had been offering it before were that whatever that number was, 19 or 18 or 17 initially. And so this is the first year it's bubbled up to actually make the list. We're advocating it. So that's one reason why we don't have good data. This is new, and we don't know the consequences of changing policy in the states.
Well, we will dig into it, following the committee and figure out just how we can fix it. The last thing we want to do is, again, impact it negatively. Anybody else before we go? Yes.
Well, if we negative impact anything, it'll be the chair's responsibility. I want you to know that. So, and we'll vote on that, sir.
Your representative, you've been around a lot longer than I am, but I realize anything that occurs in this building, we get blamed for. Unless it's a good thing, and then we got to prove that we were part of it. Okay. Representative Parrish.
Mark, did I dream maybe that this is actually being looked at and addressed at the federal level, that there's federal legislation? Did I dream that up, that to just look at this and just blanket this across the country?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, you didn't dream it. Someone in Congress did offer a bill which has so far gone nowhere, and that's why we have been continuing to advocate in the states to let each state make their own decisions rather than have the feds do it, impose it.
Appreciate it. Anything else for the panel, committee members? Thank you all. Thank you very much, and we will work towards a solution. Anybody else would like to testify on House Bill 2158? Nobody? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2158, and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2037. Ms. Edwards.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2037 has a Dash 3, which has a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. You'll recall this bill was previously heard on March 7th. It instructs health professional regulatory boards to authorize spouses or domestic partners of active members of the armed forces. It will require qualifying spouses or domestic partners to show that he or she provided services or taught for one of the past 3 years or show competency. It permits the health regulatory boards to issue temporary authorization to military spouses or domestic partners if they affirm they requested authorization from the state or territory of other authorization and are not subject to a disciplinary action. The Dash 3 would change an and to an or and thereby instruct that the qualifying spouse or domestic partner show evidence of services provided or taught for one of the past 3 years and competency. It would also direct the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to establish a rule expediting Oregon's licensing process for military spouses or domestic partners of active members of the armed forces. It will require those military spouses or domestic partners to be licensed to teach in another state and subject to military transfer to Oregon.
Thank you. I see we have signed up for testimony Mark Sansusi and Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. One thing I learned early in the building was that we pass a lot of bills and work on a lot of things that we have unintended consequences. So, again, please give us some insight on this bill and where you might be and how things are working.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee. For the record, my name is Mark Sansusi, the Department of Defense Regional Liaison for Military Families, here to express Department of Defense support for House Bill 2037 and including all three of the amendments. what we find that since I've had been able to be here September 12th, December 12th, March 7th on this issue, even the amendments proposed don't significantly alter anything that would defeat the intent of trying to help military spouses who move here to expediently be given a temporary or endorsement license to get to work sooner rather than later. I would just add that at this point, 32 states, as of today, 32 states have enacted policies to offer this kind of help, including Arkansas, Mississippi, South Dakota, and Wyoming so far this session. And just yesterday, or just Friday, in one of my other states of Idaho, passed this, and Governor Otter signed this into law yesterday, a similar measure to do this very thing. So, including Oregon, 16 other states are in the process of doing this very thing. And we just thank you for your support and stand for any questions.
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director at the Oregon Military Department. We support 2037 since, I guess, we introduced it or asked it to be introduced. I just would just make an anecdotal comment here that the selectee, the Governor Kitzhaber, selected the Brigadier General Dan Hokeson as the next Adjutant General after General Reese retires in February, and I'm almost positive his spouse is a teacher. He's been on federal active duty for about 5 years, so this could be, unless I doubt very much if she's kept her license up and decided to come back and do it, so our own Adjutant General's spouse could be one affected by this, simply because she's been out of the state for 5 or 6 years. So it is not theoretical. We don't have as many folks rotate in without an active duty base, a big active duty base, but we have many, and it's going to be spotty. I don't think it's going to be a burden on anybody if they just expedite these sort of things. It just helps them get back into the workflow from their service to their country. So appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Great. Thank you. Questions from the committee? Seeing none? Representative Parrish, yes.
Well, I continue to appreciate this effort as a spouse, particularly the effort around the teacher piece. I mean, I know that Oregon has a fifth-year program, but the fact of it is a lot of states don't have that fifth year, and some of those states actually have higher educational outcomes than Oregon does. So being able to welcome these spouses and get them right into our programs, be it teaching, health care, I see folks from the nurses here as well, and get these folks back on the road takes a huge burden off the families. So thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if I might add to Representative Parrish's comments, we do highly appreciate the teacher amendment piece of this. Washington State has it, but only about 6 or 7 other states among all these other states have a specifically talking about teachers. So we really appreciate what you're doing here, and I will confide that the Idaho bill that was signed into law just yesterday does not have that, because the Idaho Department of Ed said, well, we already do all this, and so they carved themselves out. So we greatly appreciate your help on this.
And this is, a continuation of the work that we've been trying to do with back then, the good co-chair arrangement that we had with Chair Witt and Chair Esquivel, and it's nice to be able to get this moving forward and get the dash threes to where we're all in agreement that this is doing something right, and I appreciate that. So any further questions of the committee? None? Good. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good bill should pass.
Sure. And we will, anybody else here to testify on House Bill 2037? Seeing nobody, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2037. And on this one, we can open a work session on House Bill 2037.
Entertain a motion. Gotcha. This fits really long. Chair Matthews, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendment dated March 28, 2013.
Representative Parrish moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendment dated March 28, 2013. Is there any discussion? Any discussion? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Matthews, I move House Bill 2037 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Health Care by prior reference.
Thank you. Representative Parrish moves House Bill 2037 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to Committee on Health Care by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, I must have missed something here. Why would this go to health care specifically?
We didn't move.
Yes. Ms. Edwards, or?
Oh, I wasn't answering the question. I actually had the same question.
I know, me too.
Look at that, okay.
So this is a double question then.
This may be at the request of the Speaker, Ms. Edwards.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill deals primarily with health professional regulatory boards. The Dash 3 amendment adds a portion on for teachers. We've checked with the Speaker's office regarding any subsequent referrals having to do with education and or removing the subsequent referral to health care, and the subsequent referral stands as it is.
So I think the answer is because they said so, Representative.
No, obviously.
We have made the effort to request some of the subsequent referrals. We have a couple bills coming from the Senate that have already been to other committees as well. We're trying to remove those when they come over. So we'll keep the effort of efficiency. But in the meantime, this is what's before us. Any further discussion?
No.
Any further discussion?
Nope.
Seeing none, clerk will call the roll. Mike?
Representative Thune?
Aye.
Representative Escobar?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
He's excused.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perry?
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes. The bill sent as amended to the Committee on Health Care. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2037. And open up a public hearing on House Bill 3402. Ms. Edwards.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3042 would deem the application or renewal of a driver's license, driver permit, or identification card as consent to be registered with the Selective Service System if the applicant is otherwise required by federal law to register. It will require the Department of Transportation to place a notice of deemed consent to register with the SSS on the application. It instructs that ODOT to adopt rules for the implementation of the program.
Thank you very much. And with that, I noticed that we have on our legislative summary, House Bill 3042, and on our just on our announcement, 3402. Is it 3042 or 3402?
3402.
3402. That's what I thought. That's what everything else recognizes, but thank you. Okay, now that we know what we're doing and we're open up the proper public hearing, House Bill 3402.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, I'm a Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. We really appreciate the fact that the committee's taken the initiative to put this bill up for discussion in this legislative session. With me today is Colonel Retired Herb Sims. Herb is former Chief of Staff at the Oregon Military Department, the Oregon National Guard. As a Vietnam veteran, had a distinguished career with us over 40 years. And since then, the governor appointed him as the Director of Selective Service for the state of Oregon. You probably didn't know this, but every state has a Director of Selective Service even today. So my job here today was to introduce Herb and be here for any questions that you may have, and I'll let him carry the load because he's the expert. So thank you. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate, again, the committee's sponsoring this bill, and I appreciate General Caldwell's help at the military department and his staff. Pardon my denture, my teeth. I just got these on 2 weeks ago, and I'm still getting used to them. So if I mispronounce something, it's not on purpose. I'm in support of House Bill 3402, and the Selective Service System has a registration program that's been in existence for a long time and has proven our nation's worth by allowing an inexpensive defense manpower insurance policy, essentially, in an uncertain world. It exists to provide manpower in the event of a national emergency. This legislation will provide the authority for the Selective Service to register those individuals required by federal law. Upon enactment, state law will require compliance with the Military Service Selective Service Act to qualify for a driver's instruction permit, license renewal, or identification card. The applicant will be advised that his completion of the driver's application constitutes his approval to be registered with the U.S. Selective Service. By registering, those required by federal law will remain eligible for federal employment, federal job training, and federal student financial aid. Male immigrants, both documented and undocumented, must also register with the Selective Service by law as a prerequisite for obtaining U.S. citizenship. Male immigrants residing in the U.S. who do not register between the ages of 18 and 25 may be permanently denied these federal benefits. By law, the Selective Service is prohibited from registering men 26 years of age and over. Non-immigrants residing in the U.S. who possess a temporary visa, temporary work visa, are not required because they're temporary. Failure to register is a felony.
potential penalty is $250,000 fine and/or 5 years imprisonment. This legislation is intended to protect the state residents from these penalties and to ensure that any future draft is fair and equitable to all potential draftees. Selective Services conducted research that indicates that most young men do not register. They fail to do so not because of moral or political statements or issues, but because they simply do not realize that the requirement exists as a federal law. The consequences of not registering are severe, especially for those young men who need those benefits. Oregon's maintain an average registration rate in the low 90th percentile. Many states have enacted this type of legislation. In fact, there are 41 states and four territories. And they have, in some cases, they have reached 100% registration in their states in a short period of time without any adverse impact at their respective departments of motor vehicles. I urge you to pass this bill to help protect thousands of young men from losing important benefits and to ensure greater equity for the thousands of other young men in Oregon who have complied with their registration obligation. Thanks for your time and favorable consideration of this issue, and I'd be happy to answer any questions or clarify.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the testimony. Questions from the committee? Yes.
I'm being probably, I guess, female. I've never had to go through the experience of registering with the Selective Service, so this question may sound kind of ignorant.
No.
I guess the first question is, there's no opt-out provision. Every male has to, under a certain age, has to register.
Representative Pagan, that's a federal law. That's
okay.
Specific, and it's been tested in court back in
1981. Okay. So I guess that essentially defeats my second question, which is to the extent that driver's licenses were used, but I guess there's no point asking the second question.
Well, if I might interject, the fact that females are not in the federal law doesn't mean I won't change.
Right.
I have no opinion on that. I can't have an opinion on that, but that's up to Congress and the President. And so if that were the case, then it would affect those people too.
If I could make just one editorial comment here. This bill came up, I think, in maybe 2005, 2007, similar bill like this one. What was fascinating, I think, to me at that point was this basically is trying to prevent young men, in this case, from being young men and making stupid mistakes. And there was which we didn't recruit the person to come in here, but this individual came up from the University of Oregon, and he was a 26-year-old male, or over 26, and he had gone off and traveled in South America and done other things and had a good time right out of high school, did a little college, and he left, and he came back and wanted to get student aid, and he never registered. And he was excluded from getting federal aid or a federal job, ever. And again, it was just ignorance on his part. He wasn't making a political statement or anything of the sort. He just didn't know. And I think that's probably why we don't have a higher percentage of people registering. And that is, trying to help them help themselves downstream as wants and desires change as they mature. So that was, it didn't go anywhere, obviously. That's why they brought it back today. But nonetheless, I think it's an issue that we ought to try to help our citizens be better citizens.
Thank you for that. Representative Escoville.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. General, don't we tell these students when they graduate out of high school or their senior year that they have to register for the Selective Service?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Escobar, there is first off, the Department of Defense has not put a lot of effort into the Selective Service system for obvious reasons since the volunteer forces first came out in 71, I believe it was, 72. Colonel Sims is a one-man band. There is a certain amount of support that I know comes out of the federal, the national offices to get information out to school districts to do that. How well that is disseminated and how well that is given out to young male students in high school. And again, you got, 10,000 high school dropouts every year in this school. So if you focus on just, and typically they're not 18 by the time they graduate, some of them are, some of them aren't. So I think there's just a real, not a very good system in the state of Oregon to get the information to these young males so they can get it if they do graduate from high school. Again, this is one most people want to drive, so you're going to capture a whole lot of folks in that process. So to answer your question, I know that it's difficult to ensure there's a standardized process going on at all of our schools, and assuming again that we're catching the dropouts, because we can't, once they drop out, how do you get them? But they're still legal to do that. They change their mind, they get better, they get their education, GED, whatever it is, want to go back to college, too late. They're screwed. So.
Thank you. And this bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and I assume that's based on the fact that the application now through DMV would indicate that they have consented to the registration to the... Is that correct? Is that where that...
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct. I have some figures on other states that have passed this legislation in terms of the cost. In most cases, it's zero. It could be up to $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 that some states have indicated that was what it cost them to do it. And Selective Service has dealt with each of those individually.
Okay. And I see, you know, ODOT is in the room, and Amy Joyce has been just fabulous to work for, and other veterans-related issues. We appreciate that. I don't necessarily think she's here to offer her opinions today, but perhaps if we had questions, we could ask her to come forward. Ms. Joyce, would you mind? And thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you for your service as well, sir. And here she is.
Chair Matthews, members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. Just some very brief testimony. The bill is quite short and directs the department to, you know, put a certain notice on the forms. The bill doesn't tell ODOT or DMV what to do with that information, but we're assuming that the plan is that we would take the relevant information and send it in some way to the Selective Service. There are a couple different ways to do that, and DMV has determined that the cheapest way to do it is you basically extract the information and put it in a secure site that Selective Service then comes and grabs. There's a different system that's quite a bit more automated. It was created by a national organization, but it's quite expensive. So it wouldn't be DMV's plan to use that system, but it's certainly doable. And the cost, particularly in the world of DMV fiscals, is quite low. But as I usually say when I visit this committee on a DMV issue, this is not a highway fund eligible cost. And so another fund needs to be identified to pay for that low cost to implement the bill.
Thank you. Any questions of Ms. Joyce? So in terms of costs or fiscal that you could anticipate coming our way, any guess on that where we might be looking? Or you mentioned it shows 44 states, 38 used the process. Just ballpark, is this going to be a minimal fiscal, or is it going to be rather costly?
Chair Matthews, it would be a minimal fiscal, but again, with the highway fund restriction always is a bit of a curveball in terms of the, you know, the amount of money and whether something gets sent to Ways and Means, and it can be a small amount of money and still funds need to be identified. But I would describe it as minimal. Yes.
Okay. Thank you for that. Any questions? Seeing none. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thanks for all your work. Anybody else here to testify on House Bill 3402? We will close the public hearing on House Bill 3402. And, you know, Representative Huffman had to testify just down the hall. And I know that he would like to cast a vote on the bill that we had passed earlier. I'm willing to just maybe go at ease for just a few moments and give him an opportunity. How about we take about 5 minutes and let me track him down and find out what kind of time frame we're talking. So we'll just stand at ease for about 5 minutes. Thank you very much. And we're back. We'll reconvene our meeting today. And welcome back, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I had explained earlier that there's lots going on in the building and need for us to be other places, too.
Sorry for the delay.
And so not a problem at all. And with that, we did move House Bill 2037. And with that, I will entertain a motion.
Chair Matthews, I move the rules be suspended to reopen the work session and allow Representative Huffman to vote on the motion to move House Bill 2037 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Health Care by prior reference.
Thank you. Representative Fagan moves that the rules be suspended to reopen the work session, allow Representative Huffman to vote on motion to move House Bill 2037 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Health Care by prior reference. If no objection, is there any objection? Committee? And seeing no objection, Representative Huffman, how do you vote?
I think, what bill is it? No, I'm just, yes.
Great. Thank you. And let the record reflect, Representative Huffman votes yes. Thank you for that.
Testimony.
Exactly.
And with that, is there anything else for the good of the order? Well, you will not want to miss Thursday's hearing. We'll be discussing the lottery bills and the efforts on Thursday. So we are moving forward on that agenda, and hope that the committee can be here for that. It should be a great conversation. Yes.
All right.
And I'm told by our wonderful committee administrator that we should carry over the work session on House Bill 2158. We will sort that out. I'm told by Zach Reeves in my office that OUS has contacted him immediately following the discussions that we had. It was never their intent to roll anything back. They didn't necessarily feel like that's what it did, but they're going to double check and get in touch with us to make sure that we can, you know, do what we intended to do, which is move a step forward. So I can appreciate that, and thanks to them. And with that, if there's nothing else for the good of the order, Representative Witt, you look like you have something on your mind.
Yeah, I was just wondering if we closed the work session.
That doesn't.
Did we reopen the work session, or we did by? Okay, so we'll close the work session on House Bill 2037, and then we will therefore. Anything else for the good of the order? Seeing none, and that's experience talking to you from your side. Thank you very much, Representative. And thank you all, the committee on House Committee of Veterans and Emergency Preparedness. Is adjourned. Have a great day.